Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Vaughn Miller. Vaughn, good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing good. Appreciate you guys
so
having me. That was a hell of an intro right there. I appreciate it.
I don't know if you know this. You're having a hell of a career.
Thank you.
You're living a good life, man. You've earned it. All right, so you were at the Pro Bowl last week. Let me start there. What had you more hyped? The sack in the Pro Bowl or playing dodgeball?
I think just being around all the stars. You know, it's definitely a unique event. You're around all the stars. You're on the team with these guys for 1 week, and you get to kick it with the family and, you know, chill out at the bar. It's a good event. I like it.
All right. So in terms of dodgeball, I talked to Cam Hayward yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
He told me he actually practiced before he played, before he got after dodgeball, because he didn't want to embarrass himself or his family. All right. That's how seriously he took it. Did you practice beforehand? What was your dodgeball strategy coming in?
No, I didn't practice. I like to stay patient and, you know, like, I like to catch the ball. I don't really like to be aggressive. That's why it takes so long with me. I just like to chill out and, you know, throw the balls low, because if they catch them, you know, you're out too. So I like to, you know, be strategic and just find my opening.
I know what's going on. You want to let the game come to you.
Yeah, you got to. It's dodgeball.
Right.
And that was the defining event of the skills challenge. So you got to be on point. You got to stay out the way and try not to get hit.
We're talking to Vaughn Miller. Now, Vaughn, guys like Jacksonville's Josh Allen, Pittsburgh's T.J. Watt, they're all looking to learn as much as they possibly can from people at the Pro Bowl, and they come to you. And in addition to that, you have your pass rush summit every year.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of guys in your spot would not share the tips and things you know. They'd keep the secrets to themselves. Why do you share all that wisdom? What do you get out of it?
I'm just so confident in my game, you know, and I like to be around other guys that's ringing off sacks as well. If it's a young guy and he has, you know, a move, if he has a dip, I'm going to try to learn that. You know, I feel like complacency kills, and whenever you get complacent, you're on the way down.
All right, so these guys look to you. When you were coming up, who are the pass rushers that you learned the most from when you first came into the NFL?
It'd probably be DeMarcus Ware and Elvis Dumervil. You know, those guys are just special guys. They were ringing off sacks their whole career, and I looked up to DeMarcus my whole entire life, and to be on the same team with him was incredible.
Vaughn Miller joining us. You know, some guys talk about if they're not in the game, they want nothing to do with the game.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, not some guys, dude, everybody. Like, nobody who plays in the NFL wants to watch the game if they're not a part of that game. I think your approach is a little bit different.
Yeah.
What's your philosophy when it comes to the Super Bowl and not playing?
I like being at the event. I like going to the Super Bowl. I like seeing the confetti. I think it just motivates me to get back there and to do more. And it's a special event. There's no game like the Super Bowl. And it's the highest point of our sport. And I like to be there and I like to witness it.
Vaughn Miller kicking off our Thursday coverage. We are live on Radio Row. Now, you've said that your plan for the offseason includes multiple trips out to Cali to visit Hell's Trainer. For those who do not know, who is that and what are those sessions like?
His name is Sir. That's what he likes to go off of. You know, he calls you Sir and we call him Sir. And it's a different training workout. We're outside every day. A lot of stairs, a lot of sand dunes, and high intensity, high cardio. And I feel like that's what we need going into the fourth quarter. That's what I need in the fourth quarter. I need the acceleration from the sand hill, and I need the cardio from the stair.
So when you go to this dude, is it about improving your physical strength and toughness, or is it about improving your mental strength and toughness?
I think mental strength is the number one thing. And when you go and you train with him, you really don't. Any other thing that you're faced with, you feel like you can do it, because we've done things way tougher than that.
Talking to Vaughn Miller. You know, Vaughn, the defense last year had so many injuries, which meant that offenses could send more guys at you and keep running everybody at you. In fact, how challenging and frustrating a time was that for you?
It's always challenging when you can't do your job. And, you know, I got to find a way to do our job. I got to find a way to get back up to 14 and 16 sacks. It doesn't matter who we get out there. I still got to find a way to do my job.
Maybe, but you've got 100 for your career. A huge milestone back in September when you got Gardner Minshew for number 100. It's a really big number. What does that number represent to you?
I think it represents the type of teammates that I've had, the type of consistency that I've had on defense. You can't get to 100 sacks without having a great D tackle like I have with Derek Wolfe and having a book in on the other side. So I think it's just a product of the type of team that I've been on.
You know, Vaughn, you go back to that loss to Kansas City in December, and you said, quote, "It just defeats my soul to go out there and play the way we played and lose the way we lost," end quote. I mean, this is a team that missed the playoffs the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Since winning the Super Bowl, you know this, knowing the competitor that you are and what the last few years have been like, how much of a toll has that taken on you?
I wouldn't say it's taking a toll. I mean, nobody likes losing. And I just wanted to prove a point, and I think everybody received the message well. Like, let's go win. Let's go do it right now. Let's go do something special. We got a quarterback. We got a defense. And, you know, we got championship leadership. Like, let's go do it. I don't feel like we should waste any more time. I'm ready to go.
Von Miller joining us. He's with Old Spice today. We'll hit that in 1 minute. After that final game, you said, we're done with this losing bleep. Next year is going to be our year. I'll be ready to go. So what did you see in the final few games to let you know this team's ready to turn that corner?
We got experience, and we gained exposure every single week. And that's all it is in the National Football League is exposure and experience. We got a lot of young guys. We had a lot of young guys on our team, and those guys will be year two, year three. So, and that's the base of our team. So if those guys are going to get better, we'll have a better team. And plus, we're 2 years in. And the Coach Fangio's defense, it's a great defense, but I still think it takes a little bit of time to perfect it. And 2 years in, we'll be good.
And then offensively, you got a young quarterback who went 4-1 down the stretch in Drew Lock. What about his game excites you the most?
He's just so confident. And he's just so poised. And, you know, he's not scared out there. You got guys that's 10 years, 15 years in that's scared out there. He's not scared. And you can kind of feed off that. You can feed off his confidence. And, you know, we found us a quarterback, and I'm excited to see what he can do in the future.
We're talking to Von Miller. Now, you're a guy who takes care of himself. You're always looking for ways to take care of your skin with tested formulas and subtle scents while not compromising on performance. Knowing all of that, how much are you enjoying this new Old Spice Ultra Smooth line, and what are you doing with those folks?
I'm back with Old Spice again, and you know, on the field, you like to be rough and tough and loud and aggressive, but off the field, I like to be subtle and low-key. And I like to have a deodorant and a body wash that's not overpowering with the scent. I like to let my personality shine through. And Old Spice Ultra Smooth is definitely the product for you if you want a subtle scent and you want something that's dermatologist approved. It's good on the skin. And us men, we got to be better with our skin.
Have to. You don't need to tell me that. Have to, man.
Yes,
I'll never forget when I first got in the business, and I can't remember who the athlete was, Vaughn, but somebody's like, yo, dude, you moisturize, right? I'm like, no. And this guy was like incredulous. Like, are you kidding? You don't moisturize.
That's
I'm
crazy.
Like, no, but now I know.
You got to moisturize.
You got
to
right?
take care of the skin.
It's not optional. Moisturization is not optional.
No, it's not.
You just do it. You shouldn't have to be told to moisturize either. I want to make that point clear.
Yes, sir.
Last thought. We talked about your 100th career sack. The career you're having is going to land you in Canton. We know this. Is it something that's in the back of your mind getting to the Hall of Fame? Do you allow yourself to think about what that might feel like when it does happen?
I think everybody that wants to experience greatness in the National Football League dreams and has aspirations to go in the Hall of Fame. And I definitely, you know, want to get there. I think another Super Bowl and a Defensive Player of the Year will lock me in there. But, you know, we'll see how that goes. We got a great team around me that can help me get there.
I respect that. I'm going to lock you in already right now, despite that. But I respect it. Vaughn, great to run you down. Always good to see you on Radio
Thank
Row.
You.
Thanks
appreciate
so much.
Appreciate you guys.
Hey, sports fans, listen up. I've got a daily sports podcast that I want to tell you about, one that you want to check out from Wondery and The Athletic. It's called The Lead. Every weekday morning, The Lead brings you a deep dive into the biggest sports stories of the day from The Athletic's all-star team of local and national sports reporters. Stories like, where did the Niners' new star running back Raheem Mostert come from? Or what can Zion do for the Pelicans? So if you're looking for the full story behind last night's scores and today's hot takes, make sure you subscribe to The Lead from Wondery and The Athletic. Check it out.
As promised, we're joined right now by a couple of big-time actors. Let me run down the credits really quickly. Glenn Powell is with us. The Dark Knight Rises, The Expendables 3, Scream Queens, Hidden Figures. Miles Teller is with me, also known for being in Whiplash, War Dogs, Bleed for This. Vinny Pazienza, one of my favorite guys, by the way.
Yep.
And they're both starring in Top Gun Maverick, which releases nationwide on June 26th. Gentlemen, Glenn, Miles, what's up, guys?
Hey, appreciate it. Thanks for having us on,
good
man.
Good to see you,
yeah,
man.
Big fan, man.
How you doing, man?
Thank you.
Good
doing?
To see you guys. So have you guys done Radio Row before? What's your sense of this whole thing? You've done junkets. Have you seen anything like this, though?
Miles, you haven't done Radio Row, right?
No, I have not done Radio Row, no. When the Eagles were in the Super Bowl, I was too damn excited to do anything other than just, you know, just get pumped up.
Yeah, but not excited.
I could not talk.
Not excited enough to eat horse crap when it was over, right? About that, dude, man. You're not a real fan until you start smashing horse crap.
Dude,
So you're not.
Philly fans, man, it's the best. They grease the poles, and they're still like, I like a challenge. You know what I'm saying?
So good, right? Wait, what is this? What is this horse crap thing?
What's the Eagles won the Super Bowl, dude, or ate with everybody celebrating Philly, and they just ate horse.
Like, yeah, you're not a real fan. Yeah. You are not a real fan.
It's like, well, you really feel the win. Yeah.
You know, we've been eating it every year, so now we won it.
Walking around, Miles, calling yourself an Eagles fan. Have you ever eaten horse crap? No.
No.
This is what I thought, man.
Not immediately after the Super Bowl, but on set, he did quite a bit. That was just like, you know, daily dose.
Clay, how about you? Like, what's it been like being a Cowboy fan in recent years?
That's what we were, you know, look, it hasn't been the easiest to be a Cowboys fan in recent years. Obviously, Mike McCarthy, it's kind of an interesting full circle thing where, you know, we were playing against him when, you know, that Dez Bryant catch call that cost us a really, really great season. I don't know if he's going to be truly our coach until he admits that was a catch. But
that's great. Well,
no, I feel good about the future.
He actually did talk about that a little bit. Said it probably was, you know,
we
wasn't a catch.
Did McCarthy really talk about it?
Yeah.
A little bit. Not as much as you want him to.
Yeah.
Well, if you're looking for complete ownership, that's not coming. That's
maybe not
happening.
Complete ownership. At least give the Cowboy fans what they want, which is closure. I think there's you know, obviously there's still a little people are a little bent out of shape about
my
that.
Man,
moment.
We're not in this to give you what you want. We're here to give you what you need, all right?
Exactly.
You know this. I was like, damn, dude, what's up? You guys, you're part of an amazing franchise, all right? So you're going to star in Top Gun Maverick. It releases nationwide on June 26th. Miles, I got to be honest, like, the movie, I remember seeing the original when it came out. It was larger than life, the most amazing thing. When I heard about the sequel, I was a little skeptical because you don't want to mess with a classic.
Yeah.
But then I saw the trailer, and it was impossible not to get hyped on the trailer. What was the experience like for you?
Yeah, and I think just a kind of wrap on what you're just talking about, if there, you know, if there is any one person to put your trust in, that they're going to deliver a, you know, an incredible movie, an incredible product. Tom, you know, Tom Cruise is that guy. Tom had no reason to make a sequel. You know, he's still at the top of his game. You know, the missions and everything he touches pretty much turns to gold. So they came to him with this idea, and he said, absolutely, I'm all in. If I'm going to do it, we need to shoot it practically. There's not going to be any green screen. So, I mean, that was, you know, we did 3 months of flight training because we're actually up in the F-18s the whole time. We're pulling 7.5 Gs. I don't think anybody thought it would be possible. The amount of cameras they were able to get in the cockpit, I mean, really immerse the audience in this world. It's a you know, high-octane, action-packed, just, I mean, yeah, it's Top Gun. So I think old fans, everybody's going to be happy, and I'm excited.
Well, Tom was obviously worried about making the movie in terms of, like, could we get real actors up in planes? But now he's worried about if the audience can handle it. You know, like, it's IMAX cameras in F-18s, and now we're like, all right, are we going to have a bunch of people puking?
Yeah, I was going to say, so what's that going to be like if you're in a theater? What's that going to look like and feel like?
It's awesome. Going to be the most incredible.
You're going to go home, you're going to, like, you're going to, you know, probably, like, conceive a child, man.
Yeah,
it's best that movie type. Ever. It's and that type of movie. Movie.
That
it's
good.
That good.
Like, yeah. It's gonna make you want to get after it and conceive.
Eat some horse crap. Eat some horse crap afterwards.
Hey man, you're not a fan of the franchise unless you're slamming horse crap.
Yeah,
and so we could probably get someone around here. There you go.
You guys are at the ready
on the sound effects.
Glenn, wait, what about you? Like Miles laid it out. You've said it's like a master class in how to make a movie.
Yeah.
I mean, is that what it felt like to you working with Tom Cruise?
Tom is one of the most impressive human beings I've ever met in terms of efficiency, in terms of doing everything at the highest level. He basically led a meeting, a brief, before we went up every time we flew, in which Tom knows so much about aerial photography and so much about planes. He really is, in real life, he's actually Maverick, right? So he was talking about the physics of how to do things, how to shoot things. So, I mean, we had, like, the man. We had real life Maverick leading the charge to make this thing possible, and it's been and he's the nicest guy ever. So it's nice when you're you feel safe when you're actually doing some of the most dangerous thing known to man.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for everybody who had concerns about the sequel, if the man signs off on it, then none of us should have any problem, right?
No.
If it's okay with him, it's gotta be okay with all of us.
Yeah.
Like Miles, I know you can only give up so much, right? About the movie, about the experience. Can you share any kind of story from the production or your favorite moment from the film itself? What can you talk about?
Well, it's the same actor in the volleyball from the volleyball scene that was in Castaway.
All right.
That's a little nugget.
That's, that's a nugget. I'll take that nugget.
People don't know that.
Better than nothing. Yeah. It's better than nothing.
I mean, it was, yeah, I mean, every day you're on set.
That volleyball scene in the original was so great, man.
Same actor, too, man. The guy doesn't really age. But no, it was a...
They break out all the Vaseline for that, too?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Dudes on the beach.
So many resistance bands. I think that was my favorite moment is when Miles let me use... It was like a real nice peace offering when you let me use your my resistance bands to pump up before the scene.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, you know what? Miles is a good dude.
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
For sure, man. He try and keep you down.
It's a different kind of Top Gun.
No, I do think it's exciting.
Yeah,
right?
He wants me to have flabby muscles, and I said, Miles,
good,
he wants
man.
Me to pump.
You're
that's
a team
nice.
Player.
Team
fans
player.
Fans the original... you know, I think it is interesting because this is a true sequel. So where would Maverick be, you know, kind of 30 years later? So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's got a lot in there.
I think also the fact that Tom didn't make this movie back in the 80s, early 90s, when everybody's been clamoring to ask him to make this movie for the past 30-something years. And only now we have these IMAX cameras. The story makes sense. The entry into the movie makes sense. And Tom, again, is at the top of his game and can get the Navy and the world to clam around him and do things that are next to impossible that you've never seen on camera before.
So, Miles, for instance, I appreciate that, too. You got to be in shape. It's not like you guys let yourselves go, but you have to be in shape. It's a physical role that you have to play. So what was the physical side of shooting this film like? You're up in the air, obviously, but how demanding was it physically?
Flying, when you're in these jets and you're experiencing the G's, I mean, I think, you know, it's like 1,600 pounds of pressure, and it's really incredible when you think about these pilots, you know, how they're training and to, you know, training with, you know, in air-to-air combat to once you're sitting in, you know, in the back seat and you get a sense, I mean, for these guys to, you know, airplane versus airplane, to think about them having to keep their eyes and, you know, fighting up there is really incredible, but it's no joke. I mean, it's for me to this day, like as soon as I smell like a latex or rubber, as soon as that mask would go on, I would start feeling almost nauseous.
Yeah, right.
Because
yeah.
People are, you'd get done and people would be like, oh man, was that like the craziest roller coaster you've ever been on? I absolutely not. It is, I mean, you're strapped in and you're moving, man. So every day was a challenge with that.
There's also this thing called the Hick maneuver, which is a maneuver that they taught you to basically push blood from your legs.
Do it. No, show, don't tell.
Like that sort of shit, right? So you're basically pushing blood from your legs
it's okay
to your
if
head.
You don't say that four-letter word again.
Sorry.
That'd be cool.
Sorry,
bro.
So pushing blood from your legs up to your head so you don't pass out.
Right.
And that's like the whole premise is that when you're pulling those G's, blood is literally being pulled from your head. So remembering lines, sun position, where you are in orientation to another plane, you're doing that all while blood is being sucked from your, you know, from your eyes.
1-800-636-8686. We're getting ready for the movie. It's going to drop in June. I appreciate you guys. What about the game itself? Who do you like this weekend?
You know, I'm just glad that we're not talking about the Patriots this year, do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean.
I like the style of football the Niners play. I like a team that runs the ball, gets after the quarterback. The secondary is top notch, and you know. But they also, I mean, you just look at like points per game. Niners they can pass seven times and still put up 37. They're averaging what like 230 rushing yards per game in the postseason. So I'm leaning Niners. With that being said, as an Eagles fan, Andy Reid gets it. I'm cool with that, too.
So, dude, if I'm not coming for your job and I don't show up on a set and act like I can act, why would you come here and do a better job at this than I'm doing? Come on, man.
That's what I was like. Come on, man.
Research. You're breaking that thing down.
I did not.
You're ready to roll.
I did not want to be an actor growing up. I wanted to be an athlete, or I wanted to go to Syracuse for broadcast journalism.
For real? You had that in you
so
at that time.
What's my single? Where am I at now?
Dude, you're talking the language. So how did you, if that is not what you wanted to do, how did you end up doing that and doing it as well as you have?
I was playing baseball in high school. I was a sophomore. My buddy was a senior, and he used to give me a ride home from school, and he said, I'm going to audition for this play. And I figured, well, you're my ride, so I'll do it. And I just got lucky, man. I had a really awesome drama teacher. She was, like, young and excited, just out of FSU. And I got on stage first time. The audience laughed, and it was one of those watershed moments. I said, all right, I'm going to try and do this.
So, Glenn, what about you? What's your welcome to Hollywood moment? What's that one thing, that moment, that epiphany? Was there anything like that for you?
I mean, I think a big break was getting Expendables, getting a call from I wrote a letter to Sylvester Stallone that basically said, like, why he would regret not casting me in The Expendables and why I was, like, the only choice. And I got a call from him the next day. So when Sly was like, I'll see you in Bulgaria, I was like, that was a pretty cool moment.
I want to hear Sly read the letter you wrote him.
Do it.
Slowly?
Do it.
Slowly, softer.
Yeah, Sly.
Yeah.
You got this, man. Before I go to break and cut you guys loose, read me part of the letter. No, have Sly read part of the letter.
Yeah. I'll text him right now. We'll see if we can get him to, we'll come on the show and just read the letter slowly.
Or you could just do it right now.
How did you finish?
I think I memorized the letter to Sly.
Just give us, like, you know what you wrote, buddy.
Yeah, I perform in the mirror every morning.
100 times.
Yeah.
Zen. Come on, man.
Did you finish it with just your initials, or how do you end your thing to Sly?
I really, really don't remember. All I remember is after I sent the letter.
Well, I know you remember, bro.
I remember basically saying, this is sort of risky. Because I was basically saying, hey, if you don't cast me, you're going to regret it, which is sort of a threat to Sylvester Stallone, which you just don't
do. And very humble, too, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Like that stupid little movie you're about to make ain't going to work without me.
Exactly.
Just saying,
exactly.
Sly.
You're like, he's
Aaron
done
Rodgers to
us.
The Niners, yeah.
There you go. All right, so this movie's going to drop on June 26th. Both guys starring in Top Gun Maverick. Really nice to visit with you guys. I got some sports takes. I got some Top Gun takes. Good job, fellas. Really good to see you.
Thank you.
Good to
see you. Appreciate it.
Well done.
Clones. I want to talk to you about Root Insurance. I love this company. Like, what if good drivers did not have to pay for the bad drivers? Root Insurance thinks that the old way of pricing car insurance is just not right. It's not fair. So Root developed a mobile app which measures driving behavior. By removing bad drivers from the equation, Root saved good drivers up to 52% in 2019. So gone are the days where your car insurance rate is based on your credit score, your age, your gender, your zip code. With Root, it is car insurance made easy. It's using an app to base rates primarily on how you drive. Better drivers do deserve better rates. That's why the Root app uses driving behavior as the primary factor to determine car insurance rates. And in 2019, Root was the fastest growing direct insurance company in the United States. All you have to do is download the Root Insurance app, drive normally for a few weeks during that Root test drive, and then see how much money you can save. Don't wait. Give it a try. Head to your app store, download the Root Insurance app, sign up in less than 1 minute, and start your test drive today. That's R-O-O-T. Once again, download the Root app today or visit joinroot.com and learn more and see how much money you can save. It's not available in all states. Disclaimers may apply. Visit joinroot.com for details.
Derrick Henry, Derrick, look, I'm already busted up. Just getting through that intro was hard, man. Your success on the field is making it tougher for me to do my gig. What's up? How you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for having me, man. How you doing?
Good, dude. Good to see you. Yes, so I had Mark Ingram on the show yesterday. Let me start right there. This dude's got so much energy. You know this. He's packed with energy. At the Pro Bowl, he's goofing around with you. You've always been quick to praise him and talk about how he helped you.
Yep.
What's it like when the two of you guys get together?
It's always fun. Man, Mark is a funny dude. We always have fun. Every time you're around Mark, you know you're going to have fun, man. He's a fun dude, and he's like a big brother.
Now, it's funny you put it that way. He's like a big brother, but I got to ask you about the legendary photo.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know, right? You've hit this, but if you can play along and do it one more time.
Yep.
It's you and Ingram before the 2016 National Championship.
Yep.
You look like you're maybe 15 feet taller than he is. He would tell you, man, it was a setup. It's not right. It's not real. You were in cleats, closer to the camera. It was set up to make him look bad. What did you think the first time you saw that photo?
I was like, oh, man. Just how the angle was and how the photo looked. And I think I had pads on, and, you know, pads make you more bigger, more puffier. And I think that the angle had him looking like he was, like, so small. Mark's a stout dude, but I think it was an angle. I think whoever took that photo definitely, they knew what they were doing when they did that, though.
That's interesting. And so you're picking your guy up. I was going to say, is him not owning that you're that much bigger than he is? Is it a matter of him not owning it, or does he have a point? Does he have a point that he was set up?
He has a point. I'm just tall, too, so I mean, I'm like 6'3", 5'10", so it's definitely going to be a big difference as far as height.
We're talking to Derrick Henry. I get it. All right, so when you look back on this season, what kind of thoughts do you have?
We didn't finish. I mean, it was I don't want to take away what we accomplished as a team, you know, from being 2-4 to make it to the AFC Championship, but, you know, that's just my mindset. I wanted to finish.
We're talking to Derrick Henry. You know, it wasn't even the records that you set and the numbers you put up. It's the way you did it and when you did it. For instance, how much pride is there in the fact that when the team was counting on you, you were able to deliver time and time and time again?
Yeah, you know, I just, you know, we're just locked in and, you know, focused on what I need to do. And if I knew we were running the ball, I knew I had to do it efficiently. And I think that just speaks volume for us as a team. You know, running the ball takes all 11. I think everybody who was blocking did a great job, offensive line, tight ends, fullback, receivers blocking. They did a great job for me to have the success that I had, and I credit it all to them.
Do you think in some way it's not a scheme, man? It's a commitment.
Yeah,
it's a lifestyle.
Yeah, the will to want to.
Exactly, right? It's a want to. It's so much more than a scheme. Like, how were you able to get better as the season wore on? That's not supposed to happen, but it seemed like you were just getting stronger and stronger. Were you, or did it just seem like that?
Yeah, I feel like I was, and I feel like we felt like we were doing some good things, and we just wanted to build off those. So we were going into games confident. I was going into game confident. I was ready. And, you know, whenever that thing got rolling, you know, we kept going with that momentum.
Talking to Derrick Henry right here on Radio Row. As you mentioned, the season got off to kind of a tough start.
Yes, sir.
But you guys turned it around, man.
Yes, sir.
Not only turned it around, but you came this close to the Super Bowl.
Yes, sir.
What's it say to the character and the courage in that locker room that nobody gave in, nobody let go of the rope, nobody quit?
Yep. I think, like you just said, the will to win, you know, being relentless, you know, and, you know, like Coach, he talked to us when we were 2-4. He was like, nobody's panicking, nobody's freaking out. Let's just believe in each other, do what we do, and see where it goes. And they got us to the AFC Championship, and I think that's just, you know, speaks volumes on us as a team, is that belief in each other, you know, to go out there and put a great game together and finish.
Tim, we're watching video right now of Mike Vrabel at practice. He's trying to punch the ball loose. It didn't work when you had the ball in your hands. As a guy who had the career that he had, he's a young guy. He's not that far removed from the game. Mm-hmm. What's he like to play for?
It's a lot of fun. Like, that stuff he does every day in practice, you know, trying to hit the ball in my hands. I told him we had to do that because we did it one day in practice. And I was like, now you got to do it because I'm superstitious. Like, I'm going to do it every week. Everything's going good. We got to keep doing it. And that's the type of player, that's the type of coach he is. He just does anything he can to get everything out of his players to make sure we are our best possible. And watches a lot of film, studies the game a lot, you know, is never satisfied, always hungry. And I think we feed off of him when we see that, you know, in our coach.
Derrick Henry joining me on the row for a few more moments. I want to ask you about growing up in Yulee, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
All right? You were repping Yulee High School on your helmet at
the
Pro Bowl. The town sign now reads, "Welcome to Yulee, home of Derrick Henry, 2015 Heisman Trophy winner." What was life like for you growing up there, and how much pride do you take in that sign?
Yeah, I grew up in a small town, you know. It's a lot bigger than when I was growing up. But, you know, I loved it, you know, being from a small town. Country, dirt roads with my cousins, with all my friends growing up, playing little league football from baseball to basketball to football. And then when I actually got the chance to you know, play high school football, you know, a lot of kids who, you know, are fairly gifted usually leave and go to a private school, but I wanted to stay, you know, have a big impact as much as I could. I didn't know what was going to happen, but I definitely wanted to stay at my high school and open up doors, you know, for kids that were, you know, under me, that were going to grow up and want to do something special as far as in sports. And that's all I wanted to do. And hopefully that, you know, I gave those kids the opportunity, and that's how I look at it.
Derrick Henry, my guest, which brings me to my next point. Your teammates and coaches always talk about the fact that even though you were dominating games the way you did, even though you're now a superstar, you never have acted like it. You've always been one of the fellas, one of the guys, extremely humble. Where does that willingness to be humble, humility, where does that all come from?
I think my grandmother showed me that. She was like, just as much as given to you, it can be taken away from you. So, you know, just be appreciative. You know, always thank God for every situation, no matter if it's good or bad, because he's the one and he's the reason for it. So that's how I look at it, man. I just, you know, take it day at a time. I'm never complacent. I never feel like, oh, I've done this, I've done that. I always think I can get better. I always think I can do more. That's why I'm never bragging on myself, because I don't feel like I accomplished anything. There's always more to do.
We're talking to Derrick Henry. So you're working with FedEx Air and Ground NFL Player of the Year Awards. You are one of the finalists for the Ground Award. Voting is open until 3 p.m. Eastern. How do people vote? What would it mean for you to win that award?
People vote by going to NFL Twitter. Or you can go to NFL.com/FedEx to go vote. Voting ends at 3 p.m. Eastern. If you want to vote for me, I'm up for Ground. And again, I'm saying Ground. So if you're looking at Ground, I think I make my case pretty clear as far as that award. And FedEx is doing a great job by donating $20,000 to USO for each winner for Air and Ground Player of the Year. So I'm glad to be here on behalf of FedEx to announce that.
I'm glad you're here to talk about it. Before I let you go, again, you're never going to make it about you, but I'm thinking about the year you just had. And I'm thinking about some of the things that happened, like the 211-yard game in the finale, the win over the Patriots in their house, the jump pass TD, the time you turned Earl Thomas around and essentially used him as a blocker. I know you're not thinking about you, and I know you're looking ahead, but if you think about you and you look back on the season, what are the memories you are most what are you going to hold closest to your heart and remember the most?
You know, making that run. You know, nobody expect nothing from us, you know, from being 2-4 to make it to the AFC Championship. I know we didn't finish, but as you look at it, that was just a remarkable run as a team. You know, the moments I shared with my teammates, with the coaches, us just doing what we did collectively, I think that's the special thing, you know, you can always have for memories is what you did with your teammates and the things you accomplish.
All right, so really quickly, what about Sunday? You know the Chiefs pretty well.
Yep.
What do you make of the matchup? Who do you like and why?
I like the 49ers. I feel like if any team can beat the Chiefs, I feel like they can do it. I feel like they run the ball very well. I feel like Kyle Shanahan does a great job scheming up runs to put his running backs in the best position. I feel like their defense is physical, they're fast, have experience, and they can rush the passer. And I think any team that can beat them, they can do it. As long as they run the ball, they be efficient in the run game, keep the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hand in the offense. And again, it's hard to go against Patrick Mahomes, but I think the 49ers can get it done.
Isn't that the point, right? I'm trying to find a way. Can you really go against Pat Mahomes?
Yeah, exactly. It's hard.
And I don't want to do that.
But I feel like their defense did a great job. They do a great job of feeding off each other. And like I said in another interview, they haven't lost since Week 10 when we played them. And they've won ever since now in the Super Bowl. So it's like hard.
So maybe they'll chip you off if they win. They owe you something, right? They owe you something. Derek, listen, really good to see you. I appreciate the visit very much. Congrats on a great year. And always nice to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So good, man. Derek Henry, friend of the program. Chris Harris Jr., my man, what's up?
How are you? Doing good, man, doing good.
It's been a minute or so. It's good to run you down.
I know.
How's your life?
It's going good, man. Just relaxing now and being a free agent now. So I'm just taking it all, man, and just going through this process.
All right, so that's different now. That's a different kind of process. Yeah. You're a free agent to be. Already reports of teams that are interested in you. I know you cannot get into details. But how are you approaching free agency? Are you kind of stressed by it or are you excited by it?
I've been able to play in the league 9 years and not have an opportunity to do this. I'm definitely excited to see what's going to be out there, who wants me, and just what's next, you know what I mean?
Chris Harris joining us. So what's going to come down to ultimately when you factor in the decision? Is it about money? Is it about another ring? Is it about fit? What's your criteria?
I would say it's all those.
I got it.
Winning, getting the best situation, how they're going to use me, best system, and also, making some bread while you can. So.
Got to, dude. Yeah. Got to. Listen, I've always loved your story because you were undrafted when you came in. We know this. You've fought for everything you have, and you've been a mainstay on some amazing Denver defenses. Could you really see yourself playing someplace else, or is Denver the place for you and your family?
Denver is a home for me, man. My family loves it there, and we can definitely see myself going back there and retiring. Definitely can see that happening. So that's something I'm never going to – definitely not going to count that out until it happens. But right now, man, I just want to see everybody, talk to everybody.
You should. Chris Harris Jr. joining us. Now, one of the things at the end of the season, quote, "This is my first season not playing the slot."
Yeah.
"That's where I know I'm the best in the league, in the slot. I definitely love to play both. When I'm playing outside, you only see one aspect of my game. Next year, being able to do both is kind of getting back to normal." So what was it like not to play in the slot this year, and how eager are you to get back?
Well, me, I think I'm like a Swiss Army knife, man. I could do it all. And just having me just do one aspect really doesn't show everything that I do. You know what I mean? So I just want to get back to playing all over the field, doing what I do, being that Swiss Army knife, changing the game, changing all over. And that's what I'm looking forward to next year, seeing how they're going to use me, how I'm going to fit their scheme, and going out there and doing what I've done in the past.
Chris Harris Jr. is my guest. He's joining us. Like, when you play the slot, how mentally and demanding is it to be in that spot?
Oh, it's a totally different game, man. Right. It's like I'm a linebacker on top of I get to cover and get the blitz. And so, you know, it's just a lot more things I do in there, being able to play zones, dropping zones, blitz, give them different looks, be able to go from nickel to safety, playing linebacker and different things like that. So you just kind of see different aspects of what I do, and that's what something I'm looking forward to.
Chris Harris back on the road joining us right here on the set. You know, I always love asking DBs and receivers about their favorite matchups. If I were to flip that thing over, who are the guys that you love going up against, the guys who you know you're going to have to battle with every single play, the guys who bring out the best in you?
Yeah. I'd say Hopkins, man. He's a guy – I mean, I followed all the top receivers, and he's the only guy that I faced that didn't come out the game, that didn't take a break. So that him right there, I put him at the top right there just because he doesn't come out. And he's coming
– you don't get a break.
Yeah, you don't get a break.
You can't take a play off.
Yeah, and – if he's even if he's not open, he's still open because his catches, you know what I mean, his hands. So he's a guy, him. Tyreek Hill, he's another. I mean, he a guy that can play everywhere all over the field, that, how they use him. He's dangerous. He can run the ball, catch the ball, or do it on the special teams. Those two guys, I would say right now, are probably the top, and add on Michael Thomas.
And really different guys, right? Like, from a challenge standpoint, what's tougher to deal with? A big physical receiver who's going to go up and get it, or a smaller guy like Hill that you just can't run down to get a clean shot on because he's so elusive and so
powerful? Oh, yeah, he run anybody run 4.2.
That's a problem, right?
Yeah.
That's a problem for everybody but him.
Yeah, anybody runs a 4.2, man. And I honestly, I faced him since he got in the league. So I've seen him kind of grow.
Yeah.
And this year's the fastest he's been. You know, quickness.
Like he's still getting faster?
Yeah, he's getting faster, I think so.
aren't you, dude?
I mean, I'm still fast, but this dude is getting faster. I'm telling you. I've seen it, and I've seen his speed just evolved, and his quickness and his route running since he's gotten a league. He was kind of just a straight fast guy. He really didn't know how to play football at the time.
Like a track guy.
Yeah, and now he's combined that all to his game.
When you run like that, you don't need this guy learning the game. You don't need this guy learning how to run routes.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean, now he is, though. Now he is learning how to run the routes,
right?
Because he's just gotten to that point where he's been playing receiver long enough, and Andy Reid and them, they kind of have their system, what he does. But, I mean, most of his routes are just running straight. So.
Right. Why not, man?
Yeah.
If you can't run with the guy, why not?
Yeah.
Chris Harris Jr. joining us. And I mentioned off the very top, you earned PFF's second highest cover grade of all corners from 06 to 2019. I'm talking about guys like Darrell Revis, and you're just behind Richard Sherman. So what does that number represent to you? What's that mean to you?
Man, it means a lot. I mean, just show what I've done, being consistent. I think that's one thing I've tried to do since I've been in the league, is try to be one of the most consistent corners in the league every game, every year. And I think that's what it shows. And it's hard to be on the top for that long, man, and play on a high level for that long. And we've been able to do that, me, Revis, and Sherm. And we just want to – it's going to the new decade, hop it off with a bang this upcoming season.
All right, so I feel like, without question, you're in that group. You're in that category.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you get the respect that you deserve and that you've earned for what you've done on the field? Are you feeling the respect?
Oh, no, definitely not. It's hard to do what I've done and to play every position on the field or to track the top receivers every game. Not a lot of people can say they've done that. And me being able to do it for this long and put that on my resume, I should probably have more All-Pros and Pro Bowls. But I came in undrafted, and people didn't really notice me until, like, year 5, year 4. So it kind of took people to notice what I was – it took people a while to notice what I was doing. But hopefully when I'm done, they don't pound me for that.
Dude, is there any part of you want to say, are you paying attention? It doesn't –
it took them a while.
Clearly they were wrong in not taking me, but that's not on me. That's not my fault.
Yeah.
But those labels are hard to shake, right?
Yeah.
Fair or not.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what happens, man. When you're in the NFL and you're undrafted, you're always going to have to shake those labels. I mean, it just happens like that. It's harder.
It's harder, but I'm trying to figure out, you're a 4-time Pro Bowler. Shouldn't you have thrown that rap off by now?
Nah, man. It's still there, man. It's still there. And I think you'd only understand it if you're undrafted. And nobody would understand that, so unless they are. So, and they understand the battle that you have to go through, even with the media, everything, to get that respect.
So knowing what you know right now, would you rather have gone highly in the draft, or would you not change anything?
For my career and having more accolades, definitely go higher in the draft for sure. But I think going undrafted has really made me who I am, you know what I mean? Having to go through that fight everybody against me, you know what I mean, coming from the bottom. So I think that's really made me who I am, and it's really, would I be here in year 10, going on year 10, if I was drafted early with a different mentality? I don't know. So
I was going to say, you have such a powerful chip.
Yeah.
A huge, huge chip. Would you have that same level of, like, mission, obsession, and chip if you were drafted highly?
I don't think I would, man. I don't think I would, honestly. And that's probably why I did go undrafted. It's just to have that. God wanted me to have this extra chip that I can't stop. You know what I mean? Once I lose that, man, that's when I'll retire.
Right. Chris Harris Jr. joining us. Now, you were tweeting while watching the AFC and NFC championship games. What did you think of what you saw from the Chiefs and the 49ers?
Yeah. I got to go to the 49ers game. Who they played the first? Was it the Vikings?
Yep.
The Vikings. I went to that game in San Francisco. Of course, Emmanuel Sanders, that's my boy. So I went to go support him, and I'm looking at their D-line. Like, I don't think I've seen a D-line like them other than my Super Bowl D-line or the Giants D-line in the past with Stroud in them. Like, these boys are coming. So that's the real matchup right there, I think, with Mahomes in the defensive line with the 49ers, because they got to be able to contain him. And if they can and be able to bring that pressure like they have, the 49ers have a great chance.
I think that's the whole game right there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and not only do they come for you, they get home. You can't block all those guys, right?
I mean, Bosa is the real deal, man. I mean,
what do you think when you watch him play?
He's a monster.
Yeah.
And he has a high motor. He has great technique, and he's coming off the ball. All those guys are, man. They
all
got a nice rotation.
And there's only four of them, but it feels like they're rushing eight guys.
Yeah.
But they don't need to.
Yeah. And that's the key, too. If you can get pressure without blitzing versus Mahomes, which they can get pressure, that's another way you can kind of slow down their offense.
We're talking to Chris Harris Jr. for a few more moments. So as a DB, what's it like going up against Mahomes?
It's hard, man. It sucks because you're going to have to cover all day.
Right.
You don't know. Every play from when you play, say, we play Tom Brady or Phillip Rivers, you know the play is going to be over pretty fast. You know what I mean? When you play Mahomes, you're covering
them. They're
not
extending the play, those guys.
Exactly.
They're getting it out quickly.
You see what I'm saying? You know, their job is to get the ball out fast, keep the chains moving, but let their playmakers do their jobs. You know what I mean?
Don't get hit.
Yeah. But Mahomes, nah, man, he's going to avoid the D-line, avoid the rush, buy so much time as long as he can, and that's what he does.
It's almost unfair, right? Like, when you have his hose and you throw the ball, if you're the thrower of the football the way he is, it's almost unfair that all of a sudden now he figured out how to use his feet.
And he can't. And people forget that he can use his feet and he can run.
Right.
And people think he's slow, but, I mean, we steady see him running away from D linemen and linebackers all the time. So I mean, he's fast enough to scramble.
I'm sure he wants you to think he's slow.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
He didn't look so slow as he was tipping down that sideline when we thought he was going out of bounds.
I think that had to be with the NFL rules right there. I don't think guys wanted to hit him like that. I think, like, the quarterback situation running, you got Mahomes, how do I hit him? I think that
Is that in the back of your mind when you go up against him and other top quarterbacks?
I think it is. It is in a defensive player's
mind.
They're
trying to protect the quarterback, for sure.
Because we're getting fined outrageous, you know what I mean, for the penalties. I mean, especially, I don't know a lot of guys on offense getting fined, but I know everybody on defense. I mean, I wish they could do it comparable. How much money have we lost on defensive players compared to the offensive guys?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because when the rule changes came down, I thought, that's fine. You want to make the game safer. It's an extremely violent game. You guys know what you signed up for. You know what you're in for, but you should try to make it safer. But call it both ways, man.
Yeah.
Offensive players can also deliver punishment.
Yeah.
They can deliver shots.
Yeah,
so if
definitely.
They're going to throw a flag on you guys, you got to call it the same way both ways. Do you feel like it's not called the same way?
Oh, no. The whole NFL, the game is straight offense. You know what I mean? It's to put up points. It's to have the show. You know what I mean? The NFL can be more happier to have Mahomes in this championship, just because
fireworks.
They know he's going to put up the points. The offense is coming. You know what I mean? So they love this, and I mean, that's how it is, man. Out there on the field, we could barely sneeze on a receiver, and it could be a flag. You know, so I mean, I've seen it all year.
Chris Harris Jr. joining us for a few more moments. This is a big Eric Bieniemy house. I love the guy. I love talking to him when he played. I haven't talked to him in a number of years, but when you look at that offense, does he get the respect that he deserves as their offensive coordinator?
No, because I don't think you got to really know EB, and I know him just because that's my frat brother, and I've been around him, been in the league, and just talking mess to him all the time. And
he brings loves a different that stuff too, doesn't he?
Yeah, he loves that, man. I'll never forget EB. I was probably my third year in the league. I must have hit one of his running backs so hard on the sideline and like banged him hard. And he like just went off on me and the running back. Like, what are you doing? You can't let him hit you like that. And
he's not to his own back. Hey, man, I'll get to you in a minute. Yeah. As soon as I'm done with Harris, I'll get to you in a minute.
He's talking mess to me. Like, hey, I'm talking
mess with EB.
Nah, he just brings that different mentality. I can tell he brings a different mentality to their offense, you know, just because he's a fighter. That's how he is. And he has that different type of swag. So I know he brings that mentality because that's how they play.
He's got some dog in him. He's got a lot of dog in him.
Exactly.
He's tough. Oh, yeah. I miss talking to him. All right, so who do you got this weekend?
I got to go with the 49ers just because my boy Emmanuel Sanders, man. That's my boy.
Dude, how happy is he to get that opportunity? And what do you think about how quickly he fit in?
Oh, my gosh. He's so happy. I mean, he was to be able to just kind of get that fresh start, new situation. He loves Kyle Shanahan. He really hadn't gotten involved too much in the playoffs because they've been running the ball so good. But he has to have a big game versus the Chiefs if they're going to win.
Okay. Chris Harris Jr., he is a free agent, and there's a lot of interest in him. Always good to see you on the road, man.
Oh,
you
know, yeah,
I appreciate
problem,
the relationship. I appreciate all the interviews we've done, and I'll be really interested to see where you end up next year.
Oh, yeah, man.
And as soon as you know where you're going to live and where you're going to work, we got to run this back, all right?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be ready, man. Just let me know.
Good, man. Appreciate you.
No problem.
Hey, sports fans, listen up. I've got a daily sports podcast that I want to tell you about, one that you want to check out from Wondery and The Athletic. It's called The Lead. Every weekday morning, The Lead brings you a deep dive into the biggest sports stories of the day from The Athletic's all-star team of local and national sports reporters. Stories like, where did the Niners' new star running back Raheem Mostert come from? Or what can Zion do for the Pelicans? So if you're looking for the full story behind last night's scores and today's hot takes, make sure you subscribe to The Lead from Wondery and The Athletic. Check it out.
Anquan Boldin back in the jungle. Anquan, my man, so good to see you. How are you?
Good, man. It's been a while.
It has been a while, so it's good to see you. This is what I mean. This is why I come here, so I can get caught up and run down some people that I haven't seen, you included. Now, you announced your retirement back in October, but you did it as a Raven. Why was it important for you to go out as a Raven?
Well, for me, obviously winning a championship there. And not that I didn't enjoy my time anywhere else, because I did, especially in Arizona and San Francisco as well. But, you know, playing in Baltimore was special for me. I was brought in to help bring a championship to that city, and I was able to do that. So, you know, for me, I enjoy that time and being able to accomplish that goal in Baltimore.
So what was that like, knowing how badly that fan base wanted it, that you had a big role in that? What did it feel like to be able to deliver that to that town?
It was unbelievable, man. To see the joy that it brought that city, I don't know if I can describe it in words, man. It was an unbelievable feeling. Still have a connection with that city, but just to bring that championship to that city meant a lot to me.
Anquan Boldin, my guest. Look, I know you've never made an issue of this, but it's still one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in all the years I've done this. I've never seen anything tougher than you taking that hit from Eric Smith that required 7 plates and 40 screws directly into your face. You came back and you played again. If that's all you ever did, that'd be amazing in and of itself. But you've also got this passion for justice. Talk to me for a minute about that. Where did that come from? Why is that something you want to dedicate yourself to?
Well, I feel it's an obligation that we have as professional athletes. I think God has blessed us with a platform. And I don't want to, when it's all said and done for me, to have to stand before God and he asks me, what did you do with your life? And the only thing I can tell him is, I won a Super Bowl or a national championship. Like, what did you do to impact others? Like, what did you do to help other people, like, better themselves? And, you know, for me, that's part of that conversation that I want to have with God. Like, look, you know, you provided this for me, and this is what I did with that platform that you gave me.
In other words, you know the question's coming. You want to make sure you have a good answer.
Most definitely.
When it does.
Most definitely.
Anquan Boldin, my guest, one of the causes that you're really involved with is the restoration of voting rights to people who have been convicted of certain crimes and completed their sentences. Why is that cause so important to you?
Well, I thought it was big, and actually, we we had Amendment 4 get passed here last November. So that restored voting rights to 1.4 million formerly convicted felons here in the state of Florida. And that was big because I feel like once you pay your debts to society, that should be end of that. I don't feel like you should continue to punish people for a debt that they've already paid for. And I felt like, you know, in prohibiting people from voting, we was keeping them from the democratic process that they were allowed to participate in. Florida, before we got that bill passed, Florida was one of only three states that did that. So, like, we were behind. So it's not like it was this new grand scheme or, you know, something that we came up with. No, everybody else was doing it already. Voting rights was automatically restored their debt to society.
Anquan Boldin, my guest, you know, normally I would say to you, in retirement, why not just indulge and live the life that retired guys live? Why not play golf? Why not sign the autographs? Why not live the good life? And I'm probably sure there's some of that going on, but I know why you have a much higher calling. So what's your reaction when you hear fans say, man, you're a football player, you're an athlete. Why don't you just stay in your lane, focus on what you know, and keep politics out of sports?
That's because I'm not just an athlete. You know, I'm an American citizen. I'm a guy that cares about the country that I live in. I care about the country I'm going to one day leave to my two sons. And I want that country to be better than the country that I came up in. So that's why I continue to do the work that I'm doing.
Anquan Boldin, my guest, you're also part of a commercial with the NFL. We tell the story of your cousin, Corey Jones. He was murdered, tragically. What was he like as a person, and what kind of memories do you have of him?
All my memories of Corey, man, is him with a smile on his face. He probably had the biggest smile you've ever seen. Every time he walked up in the room, it lit up. That's the kind of guy Corey was. He was the kind of guy that would give you the shirt off of his back. He was always giving, always lightening the mood for people. I mean, he was just a great guy overall. And to have his life taken away from him at that point, I mean, I definitely think he was gone far too early.
So, in a sense, you could have been crushed by the grief. You might not have thrown yourself into this, but you decided to take action. How did you get to that place?
Well, I think it's just having the opportunity to see what my family was going through and wanting to make sure that no family had to go through that again. And like you said, you can sit back and you can complain and you can, you know, come up with all of these reasons. And why not go do something? Why not go get involved instead of sitting on the couch complaining? Why not get in the game? And that's what I chose to do. And I think the misconception that people get is, well, you're bashing law enforcement. No, I'm not, because I have family members who are law enforcement. If my house get broken into today, the number I'm calling is law enforcement. The issue that I have is when law enforcement is not held accountable. And I think when law enforcement is held accountable, I think we're all better off, because I think communities are safer, number one, but I also think it makes jobs easier for law enforcement on the back end.
And Anquan, I want to make clear, I think that not everybody understands what you and I are talking about. Corey was killed by a plainclothes police officer who ultimately was convicted of manslaughter and attempted murder.
Yes, after he broke down on the side of the road. Huh. So he was waiting for roadside assistance. So just if breaking down on the side of the road is a death sentence in this country, then we're all in trouble.
I cannot argue that fact at all. So what was it like to go through that whole thing with your family?
It was tough. And I tell you, one of the things that was really tough, you know, I've done a lot of work with my foundation over the years, and everything that we've done from a foundation standpoint, we've always tried to involve law enforcement, because we felt like having that relationship between police and the community has always been huge. To go through trials and to have my cousin feel like his life was on trial, and to see police officers that I've worked with over the years sitting across on the other side of the courtroom backing this guy was definitely hurtful. But it was a process that we had to get through. It's a process where, man, there's a lot of emotions that run through you, but I think the thing that got us through is our belief and our trust in God. And then having him convicted, you find out right after that that he was the first officer convicted on an on-duty shooting in the last 30 years in the state of Florida. Mm. So you think about the number of families that didn't get justice served in their situations. And not only didn't get justice, but there are a lot of families that didn't even get their day in court. And I wouldn't want any family to go through that.
Melvin Gordon joins me on the row. My man, what's going on? How
are
you?
What's happening, baby? Been a while.
Good to see you, man. It's been a while.
Nice seeing you. Nice.
How you living?
Good, man. I'm relaxing. Working, training, relaxing.
Lay it out for me. So what's the off season been like? How are you approaching it?
I've just been working out at the facility. Just working out with Jay Leezy, Tyler, a couple of guys, the head trainer at the charge facility, just been there. I train out here too, so I'll probably be out here for a little bit, but you know, just enjoying the time off.
We're talking to Melvin Gordon. So interesting year in the sense that the team went 5-11, but 9 of those losses were by a touchdown or less. Even if you flipped half of those, we're having a totally different conversation right about now. How challenging and trying was the season for you and for the team?
It was tough, man, to have a losing season by itself, you know, outside of the holdout, outside of the injuries, outside of all that. To have a losing season by itself is just disappointing. And just, you know, it's tough to deal with. And, you know, especially having the team that we have. Like you said, you know, we won, you know, we lost by what? How much every game? You know, like under 7 or something like that. But last year we won. It was just turned. It was turned. The tables were turned. You know, the story for me, for Phil, for a lot of people, you know, we scored just a couple more points. The story would be different for us all.
So knowing that, knowing the talent you have on both sides of the ball, knowing how you were in almost every one of those games late, when you look at that, is there any part of you that looks at who did make it to the postseason and say, man, I know we're better than them. I know we're better than that. I know we should be in the playoffs.
Yeah, everybody. Yeah, we look at everybody like we're better than them, you know, and that's how you're supposed to think. You know, we have the team to do so, to do such, to make a run. We gotta pull it together, and you know, kind of get over this hump with this injury bug, man. It'd be killing us, kills us every year.
It feels like it might be a part of the game, but it almost feels like it's like some weird twist of fate, right? Like
it really
it's,
is.
Like it's contagious, like it's running through the locker room. Is that what it feels like when you're in the middle of it?
It really do. It's crazy because injuries happen. It is part of the game, but
it's what you signed up for, you know that.
Yeah, but you know when you lose guys for the year or 8 or 9 games, and then they're trying to come back, and you know it's tough, man. You can't, you know, you can find some guys, but every guy can't fill in for you know. For your starter, you know, it's just some guys are just not
that whole next man up thing is good in theory, but there are some guys you can't replace.
You can't replace every guy, let's be honest here.
Melvin Gordon, my guest, you know, I think fans see and they look at what happened in any given year and they just think football. They don't know that athletes have issues like the rest of us have issues, and they go through things. Like you had a rough season, not just on the field, but you dealt with the passing of 2 uncles and a close friend. When you and I have talked in the past, you've always been so enthusiastic and upbeat.
Yeah.
How challenging was this for you on every level this year?
Yeah, it was one of my most challenging years mentally. Got over the hump, but it was tough. Because then, you know, you're just in such a bad place. And then, you know, the season's not going how you expected it. You know, you do all this training. You're working hard. You're doing all this training. And the season's not going how you expected it. You know, and obviously, you know, you can't point any fingers, you know, because it's me. I could have came in, you know, and it couldn't have been a holdout. I could have came to training camp. So you can't point any fingers. So now you have to deal with that. You come in. Now it's just like, okay, now you're trying to prove yourself, in a sense, all over again. Now you're dealing with that. You're dealing with the fans. You're dealing with deaths in the family, friends. And just it was just tough to go out there. Now you got Austin balling. Austin's playing phenomenal. You know, to think you're just going to come in and just – it's like, how can we really bench Austin and really stop playing Austin? He's been playing so well. So now you kind of competing with that, because it's not like I got to show people that I am the guy. So everything you do now is under a microscope. And it's just – it was just tough, man. But, you know, eventually you just got to calm down and you just got to get yourself together. You know, just can't let it break you.
You know, you're being really upfront about this. Yeah. Very candid about it. I completely understand why you held out. at the start of the year. I do understand this. In hindsight, knowing what you know right now, would you do it again? Do you have any regrets in doing what you did and how you did that?
Well, you know, you start regretting it when you get your checks back and they're a little short.
Yeah.
You know, from getting fined. How the season went, you know, just knowing that, you know, I could have made a difference. You know, I have training camp and, you know, I go through those. I get in the field with the line. I'm not trying to find my way come week five. You know, I'm not getting spoon fed with carries. You know, I'm coming in. I'm ready to go. And I'm a competitor at the end of the day. So, you know, obviously I feel like, you know, our record isn't what it is because I held out. Let's just get that understood. I do feel like I could have been more helpful to the team in a way if I'm not trying to work my way in. The Titans game with that one, we win that game. You know, it's just a lot of things that could have played out differently. And maybe it wouldn't have played out differently, you know. But just in my mind as being a competitor, just if I would have been here day one, I feel we win more games.
We're talking to Melvin Gordon. He's live on the road here in Miami. So now you're a free agent, and you got other possibilities. Is it exciting? Is it stressful? How are you approaching it?
I don't know how to approach it, you know. I'm just kind of just open-minded about things. You know, obviously, I want to be a Charger. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it was all business. I don't feel any type of way towards Mr. Spanos. I don't feel any way towards Tom. You know, actually when I got there, Mr. Spanos gave me a hug and he just, you know, he told me, hey, look, I appreciate you. And that meant everything for me because, you know, he didn't have to walk up to me and say that. And he did. And that just, I don't know, that was just a big moment for me because, you know, so many people talk bad and down on him. And just for him to do that, I don't know, that just kind of, you know, that made me feel different about a lot of things. Just that moment right there. And it all it took was 3-4 seconds.
Right.
You know, coming off the field before game day, and I don't know, that just meant a lot to me. You know, and I would love to bring this organization a championship.
You know, it's funny you say that. Antonio Gates retired, and you tweeted, wanted to win Gates a Super Bowl more than I wanted to win one for myself.
Yeah.
Bleep hurt me that I couldn't get it done, end of quote. What was he like as a teammate, and why did you want that win for him so badly?
Just because I just know he gave everything he had to this organization. And I know when he retired, you can't stop him from going to the Hall of Fame. He's there, front row. But you can hold, you know, well, other tight ends when they're arguing or anything, well, we got a Super Bowl, you don't. You know, great players like that, you want them to get, you know, I want you to get your gold jacket, but I want you to have that ring. And he was just such a great teammate. And you know, the things that went unnoticed, it's just a big thing with me. Maybe because he was a free agent coming in, but he treated everyone the same. Whether it was a big name or a small name, you know, he treated them the same. You know, he a guy struggling, you know, usually guys, you know, they gravitate towards big name guys and just talk to them and then the smaller guys kind of trying to find a way, they kind of get left. But when you got a Hall of Famer like that, you know, a guy struggling, he was always there to
time for everybody
to bring him up. And it was just cool to see because this is Antonio Gates now. You know, this is a Hall of Famer. He don't have to talk to these guys, you know. He could talk to the big name, the first rounders, but he's talking to undrafted guys. He's trying to coach them up. And I just thought it was the coolest thing. And it was just leadership things like that kind of went unnoticed from the media that people didn't get to see that I seen. Because I watched Gates closely. Him and Melvin Ingram kind of took me under the wing when I got there. And just really, really two really close friends of mine, man. And just I used to watch them very, very closely. And I just see him do that, and I just be like, man, you know, that's why, you know, he deserves that gold jacket and he deserves that ring. And it kind of hurt me, you know, knowing I couldn't get it for him.
We're talking to Melvin Gordon. I appreciate that response, too.
Yeah.
So another pending free agent is Philip Rivers.
Nation.
Yeah, man. It's like it's a business. You understand this.
Yeah.
But could you imagine the Chargers without Phil Rivers?
You can't.
Can you imagine him playing for somebody else?
Philip Rivers for the Tennessee Titans. That don't even sound right. I mean, you can't even picture him in a different uniform. I don't think he can picture himself in a different uniform, you know, which is weird. That's why it's kind of weird hearing all the talks. You know, it's just, I don't know, man. But it's business, you know. And I'm starting to realize that, but You know, it's crazy.
You know, you always hear it's business. It's not personal, dude. It's like the most personal thing ever.
It really is. But I mean, like, man,
I get that it's business, but don't tell me it's not personal.
Yeah, I guess that's what I said, man. I try my best to take the emotions out of it, and it's hard.
Detaching is
hard, right? It's hard. It's hard. It's hard to not have your emotions in it. You know, to go out there and perform and perform a type of way, and then you don't get. You know, it's like it goes unrecognized. How can everyone see it besides the team that I'm on? You know, and that's how you feel. But, you know, and probably feel like, look, I gave you everything. You know, we got to try to find a way to work this out. I know Phil wants to be a Charger. I do know that. But like I said, it's the business thing. You know, it's not personal. It is personal, but it's not personal. I don't know. It's weird.
I get it. No, I know exactly what you're saying. It is and it isn't.
Keep the emotions out, man.
All right. You started the Beyond the Flash Foundation.
Yeah.
What is the goal of the foundation, and what types of things are you doing?
It's really to feed the hunger, just giving food back to families, less fortunate families that really can't provide, you know, food for their homes. But, you know, I just want to help with a lot of things. You know, I went to women's shelters, you know, gave back to them with my mom and things like that. Just going to different shelters, man. It's just crazy. People that don't have a home. You know, I just try to help how I can. I hate to just kind of pinpoint hunger. I mean, obviously that's the main focus. But the type of person I am, if I see someone struggling with anything, I want to be able to help any way I can, you know. And that's just one of the things with me. So I just try to help all around if I can.
He is a two-time Pro Bowler. And, again, more than 900 yards from scrimmage, 9 touchdowns in just 12 games. Played his college ball at Wisconsin. Had to come together again on Radio Row. Melvin Gordon, my guest. Melvin, so good to see you, man. I appreciate it so much. That was fun. Good to get caught up.
Hey, man, thanks for having me.
I'll see you soon, man. It was fun. Love it. Love it. Plus, I am a part of that Wisco family now.
There you go.
We got to stay together, man.
On Wisconsin.
Badger Mafia on Wisconsin.
You going to go to some games?
Yeah, oh, yeah, I've been.
Ooh,
oh yeah, man! Went to the Rose Bowl, saw Rutgers from Randall. Oh no, I'm about that life. Nothing but respect.
Let me get you some gear next time I see you. Good.
Yeah, I like that, man. Frank Gore on Radio Row. Frank, what's up, man?
Good, man. How you doing,
dude? Dude, so good. So good to see you, man. How you living?
I'm doing great, man. You know, all season. Just enjoying the all season. You know, getting ready for March to see what team want me.
Okay, we'll get into that in a minute. We are in your hometown, though. So, what is Miami and places like Coral Gables and Coconut Grove, places like that? What do they mean to you?
Oh, everything. Well, I was born and raised. You know, Coconut Grove, went to school at Coral Gables Senior High School, went to the University of Miami and Coral Gables Senior High School. So, everything, man.
Talking to Frank Gore, and I want to talk about the U in just a minute, but. In fact, there's so many things I want to talk to you about, but how special was last season in playing a big role in leading Buffalo back to the playoffs?
I was great. I was happy that, you know, Dean and Coach Sean McDermott gave me the opportunity to be there and help show the young guys what it takes to take a big step of what we did. And, man, it was great. The fans in Buffalo is crazy. I'm a great fan, and I was happy that I was on the team that to get them to go to the playoffs.
Frank Gore is the NFL's third all-time leading rusher. In November against the Broncos, you passed Barry Sanders to jump up in that three spot on the all-time rushing list. What was the moment like for you and for your family?
Oh, it was great. I'll say I was blessed to say, even mention my name with Barry Sanders, one of the guy who I looked up, who I thought was the best guy to play the position. When I was a kid, man, very special. And especially he did it in 10 years. So, man, that's crazy, you know. But I was so happy, man, to get to the spot number three, just because, you know, what it took for me to even get to the NFL.
You and I have talked about that. You were supposed to be done in 2 years, 3 years, mm-hmm. if you made it even that long.
Right.
You know, Barry, Frank, he still has that it. Even like he'll roll up here and he said to me, I haven't played in 20 years. I'm like, damn, yeah, that's wild. But he shows up here, man. He's just got that it. Like, it's a rare thing. It's hard to explain what it is, but you know it when you see it, right?
Yeah.
And Barry's got that.
Yeah, he got it. I'll tell you, like, man, Barry, I feel, I think the best to ever do it. You know,
what separated him from everybody else?
He did everything, man. Like, the style. I thought he was before his time, man. It was special. You know, he didn't play. You got to think about it, and you know, not to down his teammates, but come on, you can't name a guy who he played with to say get 15,000 yards in 10 years. That's crazy.
not only was he well ahead of his time, we haven't seen anything like it since, right? Will we ever? I mean, well, was he one of one?
Yeah, but I think now the young bats who we got who playing now, they got a good chance, and I think the kid Saquon Barkley, man, he kind of reminds me of Barry, but he probably just bigger. I never saw a guy that big to move the way how Saquon moved, man. And man, he got a, as long as he could stay healthy, he got a bright future in this league.
We're talking to Frank Gore. Now, Frank, you and I have talked in the past about your work ethic, mm-hmm. about how much you love putting time in the gym, on the field, whatever it takes to get ready to play. During the season, you and Thurman Thomas had a conversation. It was a great back now, Thurman Thomas. He talked about how much he hated the gym, though. What do you love about that process? What do you love about putting the work in?
Well, I just know, you know, the more you work, the easier, you know, during the season will help. It's going to be easier. So I just, you know, I try my best to try to, especially now, to show the young guys at the position why I'm still going, why I'm still able to play 15 years. So I get up, I got to show, tell Singletary, I get up 5 o'clock to be in the gym to make sure I'm getting my 30, 40-minute cardio to get my body moving to feel good. I just, you know, always want to, you know, make sure I'm ready, man, to go.
Now, he talks about how much he's learned from you mm-hmm. and how much he loves working with you. Do you use him as kind of a measuring stick? Like, if I can keep up with that young head, I can still beat that guy. I know I still have it.
That's why, you know, we help each other. You know, if I could keep up with him, with the knowledge of, you know, the game I got, been playing for so long, if I could keep up with him, I have a shot to be ready for next year, you know.
We're talking to Frank Gore. Now, Frank, you said that your running backs coach in the day, back in the day, Tom Rathman, told you that if you want to be great, you have to be great at everything. And then you took that pretty seriously. So you worked not only to be a great runner, but a great receiver. And not just a great receiver, but a great blocker. You don't have to focus on blocking. A lot of backs don't. So why was that something that you were willing to commit to?
Because I knew that I loved the game. And I know, like, you know, I want to keep playing this game. And as you get older, you lose something. You know, so the more you play, the longer you play, they rather get a younger guy at the position. So I have to bring something different that they can't do, and that's protection.
Like, you know, they're trying to get rid of you.
Yeah, you know, that's the business of it. You know, they feel like this game is a young man's sport, but you know, that's why I try to show people like I'm coming to work every day, man.
It sounds like you're still locked in. I was going to say you're coming off a year where you had 699 yards from scrimmage. You said when the season was over you wanted to take some time, get away, make the decision about next year. So you've had a little bit of time now. Where are you at mentally? How are you feeling?
I feel great. I still love the game. My body feel good. This is the best my body feel since I've been playing in the NFL because I didn't get the bulk of the carries. But I feel like I showed people that I still can play the game. And I still want to play. You know, I just want, if it's right and a team want me, I want to play another year.
So what's the right opportunity? What kind of an opportunity are you looking for?
Just to, you know, if the coach come up and be real with me and tell me my role and, you know, that they want me to help the team or whatever they want me to do. And I want to do it, I'll do it.
Talking to Frank Gore, one of the other things you said is you want to talk to your son about it because he's starting mm-hmm. college now. And he announced in December that he's going to play at Southern Miss.
Right.
How excited are you to see him earn that opportunity and a chance to play at the next level? What's that like?
Oh, man, I was so happy. You know, 2 weeks ago I took him to drop him off to school. Man, before
Dude,
I left.
What was that like?
Man, it was hard, man.
Right.
It was hard.
We did the same thing with
ours.
Yeah,
it was hard. It was hard. But it was bittersweet, you know, because he doing something what I've done, you know, go to college to play ball. And he loved ball, and, man, and it was hard for me because I'm dropping my son off, man, my baby, you know. And I didn't drop a till in front of him, but once I got in the car and left, like a couple tills came down.
Well, I get that. So has he been checking in or not?
Yeah, he been calling. You know, I call him. I've been talking to him every day. You know, this is the first time.
Do you? Every day?
Every day. Let me know how school going, how your workouts. You know, if you been the first guy there, you know, and I tell him what it takes if you want to be a special guy at the play the game of football, you know.
Does he like that call every single day, or is he like, yo, Pops, I got this, man. Give me a little bit of space. I'm good.
I think right now, because this is his first time leaving, he okay with it, you know. But I think once he get comfortable and, you know, I think, you know, he'll probably tell me, chill out, Dad. I'm cool.
I get that. Frank Gore, my guest, before we go, or before I let you go, I want to talk to you about Lowe's, but also one thought about the U.
We got to talk some Canes football now. You proudly represent the U. You're part of that legendary 0-1 team that's regarded as one of, if not the best team ever assembled. Mm-hmm. What do you remember most about your time and that team?
Oh, man. Just when I first got there, we was working out summer workouts, man. And man, I thought I went to the wrong place because I'm getting smoked out there, man. I'm like, man, I might can't play here. And how competitive we was, man. And you know, just being, you know, like the coaches weren't really, didn't really have to say nothing. Like you had guys like Ed Reed, you know, leading it, you know, Ken Dorsey leading the pack, man, telling us like what it take to win. And I think that's what it got to get back to, you know, guys who, you know what it take, you know, to get the.
It's a culture, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They just knew.
Like the coaches, like when I was there as a freshman, our coach didn't really talk, man. He didn't really have to say nothing. Ed Reed, you know, Ken Dorsey, and man, they ran the room, you know, like we couldn't sit in the back. We had all freshmen had to sit in the front. So, yeah, man, it was great.
Let's be very clear about this, too. The running backs on that team, you, Clinton Portis, Willis McGahee, Najee Davenport, and Jared Payton. I mean, how much fun was it being in a legendary group like that? What were those running back meetings like?
It was tough, competitive.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I still, you know, that's why I was successful in the league, just being around them guys at a young age, man, knowing what it takes, knowing that you got to build your A game every day. So that's why with all of us, when we got to the next level, it wasn't nothing to us, you know.
So what about the defense, too, really quickly? Reed, who you mentioned, Vince Wilfork, Jonathan Vilma.
Sean Teller.
Yep. Phil Buchanan, Antrell Roll. Yeah. Man, go on and on and on. When did you first realize how special that team could be?
When practice, how hard it was. Then once I got into the game, I felt like the game
was easier.
Yeah, it was so slow, man. It was so slow.
It's incredible.
I thought my freshman year, I thought college football was very easy. Like I felt like it's easy. Like I was like, man, it's the same like high school to me.
Because you probably didn't know that you were playing with some of the best to ever do it, right?
Yeah.
It was just the new normal.
So competitive, man. It was so competitive.
All right, so you're working with Lowe's this week. Take your time. What are you doing with Lowe's?
Tomorrow in Lowe's and rebuild together. We're going down to my community in Coconut Grove. We're going to rebuild 9 houses. 200 people are going to join me, and I can't wait to get my hammer. And also, I can't wait to see some of the people who in my neighborhood, who I know, might come out, and you know, if they want to help, they can come join us, man. But I'm very excited about going back home and to rebuild some houses in Coconut Grove.
What a great, great cause! That's Frank Gore, third all time in the NFL rushing list, appearing courtesy of Lowe's, rebuilding together, and the kickoff to rebuild event. Frank, it goes without saying, but whenever somebody says it goes without saying, they're going to say it anyway. I appreciate you, man. I've always appreciated our friendship, our relationship. You've always been great in the jungle, and it's really good to see you.
Thank you.
Thank you, man.
Thank you,
great seeing you. Frank Gore. Lorenzo Alexander on the row. Lorenzo, good to see you, man. How are
you? Hey, I'm doing great. Jim, yourself?
Good. Really, really good. It's good to visit with you in person.
Yep.
If it was hard for me to even say a member, what's it like for you to hear it? How is retirement treating you so far?
Well, it's just the off season for me, so I really haven't settled in yet. I think it's still a little bit of surrealness to it. But I still catch myself, you know, even when I go on and do some interviews, saying we, us, what we plan to do next year, how good we're going to be next year. So it's still something that I have to kind of work through and eventually work it out of my system.
All right, so you're in the process of getting it out of your system, but you're also in the process of setting it all up, the next thing.
Right.
Lorenzo Alexander 2.0, what does that look and feel like?
You know what? It's going to take a little bit of time to kind of figure that out. You got to flush through a lot of things. I think immediately one of the things that I'm kind of gifted in is doing some media, so I want to try that out and, you know, go visit with the different networks, audition. But my real purpose in life is service, you know, so I work with the PA, I've worked with the team doing some developmental things. I want to do some things back home with some youth and kids. And then hopefully I can find some type of way where I can catapult that into doing something with just young men and pouring into them in some type of way. But this is going to take a little bit of time just to kind of sit back, draw out a plan and figure out what's best for me and really what's best for my family, because I don't want to jump right into something to where I'm back to, you know, 9 to 5 and not really be able to pour into my kids the way I want to.
Where they thought they finally got you back.
Right. And I'm going, oh, here I go. Dad's gone. I'm doing my thing again. And so whatever I do is going to be around my kids, my daughters, my sons, so I can coach, go to games. Me and my wife can take trips and really enjoy what we created over the last 15 years.
Lorenzo Alexander is my guest. So when you lay it out like that, is it a matter of maybe not walking away from football, but rather stepping towards your family?
Yeah, most definitely. And I think at the end of the day, that's what made it peaceful for me. Because I think a lot of guys, including myself, especially if you can still play, you kind of go back and forth. Okay, I can deal with the pain. You know, I enjoy it. I don't like this part, but I want to play. I'm still doing good. I want to be there with the guys. I love the locker room, but I love my family more. I love my wife. I love my kids, and I want to be around there for them. And I think Kyle Williams coming back gave me a great picture of what that looked like, because he retired last year from our team, and we have a great relationship. And when he put in perspective just being around for his daughter especially, who is in middle school, the same age as my daughter. She may even be a grade older. My daughter's in the sixth grade, Zoe. She's going to be out of the house in 6-7 years. So if I decide to continue to play this game, continue to be away, having to do treatments and massages and all this just to prepare, to work out and do all this thing as an older player, that's additional time away from me being able to be a role model, being a father, being able to pour into my daughter, and be able to take advantage of this time while she's still in the house and still wants to be around me.
You know, it's been said, and it's so true, you need to prepare in order to prepare,
right? Yeah. And it became a whole new job for me, and essentially, I mean, being 36 and playing such a physical and violent game that's made for 21, really nobody, but 21 and 22, 23-year-olds, you know, the massage, the dry needling, the Pilates, the stretch classes, the yoga, the Peloton, what, you know, doing all this other stuff just to go and be able to work out and feel good and then be able to go and obviously produce during OTAs, mini camp, and then obviously most importantly the season.
And listen, you're not afraid to work. You've never been afraid to work. But you reach a point in time where the grind is just, it's not fun anymore. It's right. Just no longer worth it. And is that how you know it's time?
Yeah, for me it wasn't necessarily. I enjoy the grind, right? I enjoy working out. I enjoy showing up and competing every single day. I love the game. I love Sundays. I got tired of being sore. I mean, just you go out there and car crashes over and over repeatedly. And I'm a little bit of a throwback player. You know, back in, you know, early 2005 is when I came out. And so the mentality of football was a lot different than what it is now. And so I throw my body around, you know, recklessly. I think a lot of guys do. But being 36, it gets old quick, you know, waking up on Monday and barely getting out of bed. And that really trickles all the way until Friday. So at this part of the year, this last season, I wasn't practicing until Friday just because I couldn't practice until Friday.
Right. Lorenzo Alexander joining us, talking about his new life, talking about retired life. Now, if you had been drafted out of Cal and you'd gone to a team where you played linebacker for more than a decade, would that have felt better than what you did, where you had to fight and battle for everything? Or is there something to be said for the struggle and what you learned about yourself in the process?
For me right now, I love the perspective that I received having to grind and earn and get everything I needed. I mean, I think, first of all, it humbled me. I don't think if I was ever humbled in this league at an early age, not being drafted, being cut a couple of times, I wouldn't have tapped into just that spirit of wanting to overcome. I don't think I would have opened up myself enough to allow coaches and other players to speak into my life and help me become the football player and the man that I needed to be in order to have a 15-year career. I think oftentimes when you have success over and over and over, you get drafted, you get all this money, oftentimes you think your stuff doesn't stink, and so you're more closed off as far as receiving the information that you need to create some longevity and really impact so you can pass that along. And so I definitely, looking back now, I'm glad of where I got being undrafted, being cut, you know, bouncing around a little bit, because it really made me appreciate the opportunity. It humbled me and allowed me to receive so much more than I probably would have if I would have probably came another way.
Lorenzo Alexander is my guest on Radio Row. When you made your way up to the set, I saw my attorney and very good friend David Feldman intercept you. I'm like, man, I know what that is.
Yeah.
That's some cow bull crap going on right there.
Wow.
Because he disrespect.
Hey, you bold to say it this close to me, and it's nothing in between us. Hey,
you respect that, right?
I respect
you. Respect that, man. Hey, look, I just know this. I did it because I know you're a good dude.
Yeah.
And I'm
yeah,
all right.
Right.
And I'm
right.
A UC guy. I went to UC Santa Barbara. Yeah. Friend. Nothing but respect. My point
banana
is.
Banana slugs? What are they?
No. Gauchos.
Oh, Gauchos. Oh,
you're thinking about Santa
Nobody
Cruz.
Knows. Oh, close.
Yeah, they all run together.
Close, yeah.
If you went to Berkeley, the rest of us all run together.
Yeah.
I feel you. What I'm getting at is, what you look back on your time at Cal, what kind of thoughts do you have? What was that like?
It was enjoyable. I went to Cal at a time when I first got there where we weren't good at all.
Right.
We were, I think my freshman year, we were 1-11. And by the time I left, we were number five in the country, you know, 11-2. And I played with guys like Aaron Rodgers, Brandon Mejmain, Marshawn Lynch, guys that really helped us turn that program around. And so it was really cool to be a part of that. Justin Forsett. It's a lot of guys that played in the league that was on that team. And so it was a real cool experience. And, again, we had to earn all that. And so when we became, you know, essentially, I'll say a powerhouse, you know, that lasted maybe 3 or 4 years where we were probably dominant in the Pac-12 or Pac-10 then, we appreciated it more because we had to earn it. We had to take it. It was not given to us because we were 1-11. And to be able to turn that program around by the time I was a senior was very special.
Sports is, always will be, about rivalries, great rivalries. You saw this in the NFL. What about that college rivalry, the big game, UC Berkeley and Stanford? What was it like to be in the middle of that?
I loved it. It was always contentious. You know, people think those are academic schools, but when you're out there playing those games, it gets really rowdy, really crazy out there. And so today, I mean, I played with several Stanford guys, and I still always give them a hard time. And so it's just something that, you know, is lifelong. And once you're a Bear, you're always a Bear, and you can't stand those trees.
You mentioned Brandon Mejmain. You guys were roommates. Man, what a great character. What a great character he is. What was he like as a roommate?
He was a great dude. You know, young guy. He was 2 years younger than me. It was amazing when he came out. He was only maybe 245, 250, but was explosive, had those big legs, and obviously developed into an all-pro tile D-tackle in the league. But really cool guy. Really always had a great perspective and a different way of thinking about things. You know, we used to always hang out going down to L.A. in his home down there with his parents and his brother. And so it was just more like a brotherhood, you know, kind of coming up with him and getting to know him. And we really helped each other, I think, just become better football players but better people at the end of the day.
Lorenzo Alexander joining us. Now, you've been so active in the community for so long with the Aces Foundation.
Right.
How do you see that growing and evolving now that you are retired and you have a little more time on your hands?
Right. You know, I could be more impactful in the organization. You know, I'm a guy that's very hands-on, and obviously being playing, that takes a lot of time away. So now I can be the guy that's out there kind of running some of the programs. We want to do some more STEM programs in the Buffalo and the Oakland area, but kind of my passionate initiative that I'm coming up with is bringing in and keeping it real intimate. 5 to 10 kids from all the cities I've been in, whether it's Oakland, Phoenix, up in Buffalo, Washington, and I have relationships with coaches there. Identifying young men that have you know, great ability but come maybe from some backgrounds that are adverse, flying them out to Phoenix and kind of doing like a mentoring training camp. You know, showing them how to lift weights, doing life skills classes, going to ASU, going to Arizona, and then exposing them to other young men that come from similar backgrounds but are from different parts of the country. And so just to really help them open up their mind, open up their box, and then give them some real skills to be successful and tie that passion and that ability that they want to be, you know, obviously being in the NFL, and give them some real resource to help them attain that dream.
It's such a great cause. And then finally, you and I have talked about it so many times, but this is how much I respect the community and that fan base. What was it like to live and work in Buffalo and be amongst the Mafia?
Best fan base I've ever been around. But as far as obviously, we always see what they do for the football team, the 30 for 30s and how crazy they can be at games and rowdy. But they genuinely care about their community. And being a Bills player, I'm part of their community. And so coming out, supporting our events, you know, helping my kids do certain things, plugging me in here and there for different things that I'm looking for, always donating. And I'm just part of that community. There's so many great people out there. The Bills Mafia sisters, I call them. Del Reed, who does a great job with his 26 shirts, help raising awareness and money for different organizations by selling T-shirts, Bills-themed T-shirts. And that's just a couple of examples. But it was real cool. Real family-oriented, blue-collar people that were down to earth and really respected what we did. And I have so much love for that fan base.
You know, the thing I love about them, too, they love their team. We know this. But they love their community.
Right.
They love their neighbor.
So. Yeah.
And I'm not trying to sound like some kind of corny dude or something, but there's something to be said for that. They love their neighborhood. They love their neighbors. They love their community. They love that life.
Yeah. And there's countless examples. I mean, obviously donating money to, I don't know, one of the radio hosts up in Baltimore. You know, he's had some negative comments about Buffalo. And what did they do? They end up donating to his foundation for his sister. You know, so different, like Andy Dalton, when he helped us get into the Super Bowl, donating to his organization.
That was great, too.
You know, I mean, on the Super Bowl, to the playoffs after 17 years. So those type of things, they just, you know, they embody what it really means to be a great neighbor and a great person.
You had an absolutely great career. Lorenzo Alexander, and just getting started with the next chapter, 2.0, whatever you want to call it. Lo, really good to see you. I always appreciate the interviews, the relationship, and I know this will not be the last time we do this. Great to have you back on. Thanks so much.
I appreciate you, Joe.
Ron Rivera.
Hey, Jim. How you doing, man?
Coach, it's been a while. Good to see
you. It has. Who'd you have on before me? It's from Cal.
Lorenzo Alexander.
Oh, right on.
And this guy right here is my attorney. Put himself through law school at Bolt.
Oh, wow.
So I told him, I'm like, stop rolling up on all my UC Berkeley guests, all right? Leave the coach alone. He's walking up here. So, like, when you look at the, you've lived the football life you've lived.
Mm-hmm.
The success you had in the NFL as a player and as a head coach. Take me back to college. What were those years like at Berkeley?
Oh, I enjoyed it. I really did. It was a great experience. I loved everything about being at the University of California at Berkeley. I enjoyed the success we did have, even though it was limited, and I had the opportunity to play for Joe Capp, which was...
What was that like?
That was cool. I mean, it was a completely different way of football. It really was. He didn't quite see things like the normal coach, and he had this spirit about him about if you didn't want to play for Cal, then you were the enemy, and that was just the way life was, and so it was us against everybody else in the world.
He is the new head coach of the Redskins, which we will get to momentarily, Ron Rivera. Ron, one more thought about your time at UC Berkeley. Was it all football all the time, or could you kind of mix in with the student populace and live that life as well? Because there's never been, probably, I would imagine, another time in your life where you're surrounded by so many intellectually gifted people.
You know what I did after my freshman year, which my roommate was a college football player, I decided to go back into the dorms and just have a regular roommate. So for my last couple of years, I just had a regular roommate, just kind of hung out, got to know a group of guys that have become lifelong friends. I mean, one's a doctor, one's an electrical engineer, another one works real estate. I mean, these guys are near and dear friends of mine, and, you know, they're all out on the West Coast. So every time I go out there, I come see them. Or they've flown out to where I've coached and caught games with their families. So we've stayed close friends.
Nothing better than that. Ron Rivera, my guest. So it's been about a month now since you were introduced in Washington. What has the last 4 weeks been like?
They've been awesome. They really have. You know, we've got a lot of work to do. One of the neat things and one of the reasons I wanted to be hired early was because I wanted to be able to get my coaching staff in place and get started as quickly as we can because I want to stay ahead. So one of the things that we've done is we've worked on our playbooks, both offensively, defensively, and special teams, and got those things started. We've started our player evaluations. We're evaluating them very thoroughly. We're each guy individually, and then we're going to do them how they fit into the unit. And then when we get back off of this break on the 10th of February, we'll sit down and establish our core, what our needs are. Do we have players that fit the core? What we don't need, what we don't have, then how can we get them? Can we get them in free agency? Can we get them through the draft? So, again, we want to start putting our plan into place as we get ready for a combine, free agency, then the draft.
Ron Rivera, my guest, listening to you lay it out that way, there clearly was not this, I can take a year off, charge my battery, hang with the family, do some traveling, get caught up. You were not about that life at all. How come?
No.
You could have.
I could have, but, you know, quite honestly, the game has been, a little cliche, it's been very good to me. It really has. It's given me every opportunity that I've had to be who I am today. I want to continue that because who knows, if I had taken the year off, maybe I liked it too much and would have stayed away.
Huh.
But getting back into it, I feel like right now I kind of got a good feel for what I want to do now, how I want to do it, what can I do to make it better. That's what I like about getting back into it right now.
Ron Rivera joining us. So you and Joe Gibbs actually talked about this during the process. What was your biggest takeaway from him, and what kind of questions did you have for him?
Well, you know, first question I had was tell me about your opportunity working with Dan Snyder. And a lot of things he said were so positive, you know, that this is a guy that really wants to win. This is a guy that will support you, that will be there for you. This is a guy that wants to take a different approach from the one he's had for the last 10 years. He doesn't want to come in and have a guy that's going to be, you know, a single voice. He wants to create this collaboration between his coach and his personnel department. And that's one of the things that really attracted me to this situation. So when I sat down with Mr. Snyder and he starts laying out his vision and how he sees things working in his organization, it really resonated with me because now instead of sitting there saying, well, you know, I'd like to see if we, hey, we got to get a guy like this. This is what I want to see us have. Can we get this guy? How can we get this guy? And I have a young guy right now that Mr. Snyder has elevated to director of player personnel, and that's Kyle Smith. He's basically handled the drafts the last 3 years. That was one of the things that I did. I went and looked at his draft. The success he had in those 3 years really spoke volumes as to the types of players he has. If you look at the film, you see a lot of young guys playing. Last year we had guys that were rookies starting at linebacker, starting at defensive end, you know, starting at wide receiver, starting at quarterback. So they've played a lot of football right now. And because they've played a lot of football, next season won't be new to them. It won't be a big experience. It'll be, hey, I've done this before. I can do this again. So I like that. Then I thought there were some good key veterans in certain positions that just, you know, the defensive line is a good young group of second, third, and fourth year players. It's a soft offensive line. We got a question, obviously, at left tackle. We've got to find out the health of our left tackle and then go from there. But he's a very good player, but we've got to see. We look at the young wide receivers that are growing and developing into this. And then we got a young quarterback that played well at the end of the year who got his opportunities. And when they game plan for him, instead of just, you know, throwing him in the middle of the game plan for his specific skill set and what he does best, you saw some growth. You see the potential for him to get better. And who knows? We have Alex Smith, who's hopefully got an opportunity to come back off of that horrific leg injury.
Ron Rivera, my guest. No, Ron, you were not going to take the year off. It's very clear to me. You were not taking a year off. You know, one of the first things you did was bring in Jack Del Rio. Now,
yes.
I'm just curious. Tell me I'm wrong. You've never played with him. You've never coached with him before, right? So how did this come to be? Why was he your guy?
I've always competed against Jack. And Jack actually reached out to me, and I thought, this is very interesting because I know who Jack is. I know his background. I know the success he had as a defensive coordinator. I know the success he's had as a head coach. Also, one thing that I've always told myself that I should always make sure I have is a former head coach on my staff, a guy that I can throw things off of, talk about certain things, and also a guy that knows how it should be, and we can talk about it. We can disagree, but I know I'm talking to a guy that's got the same experience that I need to help me go forward, and that's what excited me about it. I actually flew down, spent better part of probably about 8 hours with him, talking football and just getting to hear his philosophy, watching him talk about defense and the passion in which he talked. He is a guy that took a year off, and now all of a sudden he wanted to get back in. And I thought, you know what? This is a guy that's going to help command respect for a group of young defensive players.
You know, what you said was also, I want a map. Don't draw a map if you've never been there before and don't know how to get there. I don't need that map.
Yep.
That's Jack, right?
Yes, that's exactly what I mean by that. I have a guy that's been there, that's gone through the ups and downs, knows what it takes. That's what really kind of attracted me to Jack when we started talking.
I think, Ron, before I let you go, people who know, like Andy Reid is beloved in
yes.
the profession. I mean, he is yes. beloved in the profession. I don't think maybe because he hasn't won the Super Bowl yet, he doesn't get the respect or love he deserves. His coaching tree is unbelievable. What kind of an impact did he have on you?
Tremendous impact. I think he's probably one of the main reasons I am who I am as a coach. A lot of things that I do, a lot of things I believe in, are fashioned after the way Coach did things when I was in Philadelphia with him. You know, I was on that original staff. And I think from that original staff, there's like six guys that became head coaches. And then as his staff grew and changed, more guys have become head coaches because of him. And he's a guy that truly cares about who you are a person. And that, I think, is why so many people, you know, why he is so beloved. And I want people to understand this, too. Whether he wins or loses, his legacy as to who he is in this league is already set. This is just, to me, the icing on the cake.
I think that's so true. I'm really of the opinion, if he wins, he's in a lock for the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
But I don't think that he should have to win that game this week to get into the Hall of Fame. I think he's
agree.
Done enough personally.
No, I
Do
agree.
You?
I agree with you. I don't. I think his legacy is – I really do mean it. But, you know, if he wins, he just this is just the icing on the cake. This is the cherry ice cream.
All right, so do you think he will? How do you see Sunday?
Ooh, this will be a tough – you know,
great
this,
matchup.
You talk about complete opposite matchups, too.
Right,
I
right.
mean, that's the thing that's crazy about
Styles
this game.
Styles make fights, right?
Yes, it does. And the neat thing about it is I think you've got one of the old guard veteran coaches against one of the young innovative guys. I mean, these two guys are two of the better coaches in this league. I think they've done tremendous jobs. It makes for a very exciting game.
You know what's really interesting to me about the young innovative head coach in Kyle Shanahan? Yeah, I mean, he can scheme up, coach up, but at their core, what are they, man? They're punch you in the face and run down your throat.
Yes, that's the physicality of the way they play this game. And I think both of these guys are good situational play callers. They understand game situations. They understand when you've got to set the tone. Then they understand, oh, I need a quick strike. We got to do it this way. Or, you know, we're getting into a tough part where we've got to grind one out. Let's go ahead. It's a 4-minute drill. I mean, they understand that part of the game.
Do you think finally the 49ers, that great defensive front, and somebody always seems to get home, right? You can't block
yes.
all those guys. Are they going to consistently disrupt Patrick Mahomes and get hits on him.
You know what's interesting is, and again, kind of at one point I thought last year in the AFC Championship, what Bill Belichick kind of had a little bit of a blueprint as to how to get after Patrick Mahomes, how you can't let him ever get comfortable. You can't let him set his feet. The guy's
don't let him get into a rhythm.
Exactly. So dynamic that you've got to keep him off his game, because if you don't, he's going to get into that rhythm and he's going to make things happen.
So do you think they will, though?
Oh, I think they have a chance. They have the personalities and the players to do it.
Ron Rivera, my guest. So really quickly, when you knew that you were not returning to Carolina, again, you didn't go on vacation. You were getting up early in the morning.
Like, I know.
You were still right on point, right during your process or doing your process. What types of things were you doing and thinking about then?
I was mapping out, you know, pretty much how I want my next situation to be. You know, I started working on my head coaching book. I started working on some of the plans that I felt I was going to need going forward, like the one we just talked about, hey, making sure we do a thorough evaluation of our organization. Don't jump to conclusions. Don't evaluate in 1 week and say, okay, we need this, this, and this. Let's go through this. Let's get an opportunity. I mean, I haven't met all the players. I mean, I really haven't reached out to the guys on purpose. When the season ends, what do most players do that aren't in the playoffs? They're gone. They disappear.
They unplug.
And then February, they start showing up. So I'm waiting. Guys will start coming in and give me an opportunity to sit down and talk to these guys. And that's what I'm looking forward to, is a chance to talk to the players and get to know who they are as we go forward with this process.
He was introduced as head coach on January 2nd. He is a two-time NFL Coach of the Year, led the Panthers to the Super Bowl, as well as three straight divisional titles from 2013 to 2015, and now the head coach at Washington. Ron, it is so good to get caught up. That's how you close the show. Thanks for setting me off on a good note, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jim.
So good to see you,
sir.
Good night.